Previously on 24.
Any problems getting the canisters out?
No. They were hidden exactly where you said they'd be. Russians will finally understand the consequences of occupying our homeland when we turn Moscow into a graveyard.
Erbik has just cleared airport security.
And the authorities don't know anything's been stolen?
Not yet.
The only thing we have left to take care of is Bauer.
You paged me.
I need you to do something.
We have our hands full searching for the nerve gas.
Bauer is a priority.
I just signed a treaty. Now all of a sudden I find out that the terrorists are still out there. With nerve gas.
You people have to listen to me. I had a document. It was hidden in my blouse. It's gone. Someone stole it from me.
This is what she was like before you sent her to Vermont.
You're suggesting that I readmit her?
For her sake, if nothing else.
Aaron? My wife is gone.
We have a priority alert.
You've been burrowing into classified CTU protocols without authorization.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Stop. I know you logged onto the security subsystem where you had no right to be.
Someone knew that Jack was alive. It's critical to our investigation that we find out who that was.
Did you let that man into CTU? This man is a professional assassin. He just killed Dr. Paulson. He tried to kill me. Who told you to let that man into CTU?
The White House. Mr. Cummings.
The following takes place between 12 p.m. and 1 p.m.
Hi, this is David Fury, the writer of record of episode 6, called 12 p.m. to 1 p.m.
And John Allen Nelson, a.k.a. Walt Cummings.
Boo.
Boo and hiss.
Okay, here's the first bit of trivia. In the original script, it was supposed to open with an interrogation scene between Curtis and Spencer, the mole who was working for Cummings. But the episode turned out very long. We were going to do a little bit more of a story with Spencer and Chloe and kind of enhance that relationship a little bit and further that, where Chloe's watching him being interrogated, but like a lot of things on the show, it's like a moving train with the windows open.
Right.
Stories fly out the window as it's moving so fast. And you go, what happened to that Chloe Spencer story?
Well, I got really excited when I read the script. It was a great script. There was so much of my character in it. I was like, yahoo. And when I got to the end of it, I was like,
counting the lines, were you?
Oh, shit. This means there's nowhere else to go. Not much further.
That's right. Yeah. You're giving up the whole plan. That can't be good.
No, it was the good news and the bad news, right. And it was really bad news. But it's an amazing thing to watch it all come together at the end, though. Hey, and I got a box at the beginning of this one.
Yeah.
That was my first, you know, Walt Cummings title.
Absolutely. Hey, awesome,
first, you know, the first Walt Cummings title.
All
so
right. You've got your box cherry broken.
Yeah, absolutely. By golly.
So here we are talking all about, it's all about Walt Cummings and Jack trying to get to Walt Cummings through Mike Novick.
Jack, I'm sorry if I'm being a little distant. I just...
Now, you know, at what point did you guys decide that Cummings was truly a patriot in his own mind?
Well, actually, you know, when we originally started the season, we didn't know it was going to be Cummings. We didn't know it was going to be your character quite yet. Because we talk in very broad strokes, and we just said there was going to be a Rasputin in the White House.
Okay.
There was going to be someone who was going to be pulling all the strings and doing things and manipulating the president. And it just kind of fell. It was the obvious. You were the obvious choice after last season, after pulling the whole thing on Jack and trying to have him killed and manipulating Logan into that. That it became obvious that you were going to do it. But we realized if we're going to do this story about a conspiracy within the White House, it had to be justified through the prism of patriotism as much as is happening in the world right now.
Right.
You know, whatever acts are being taken, it's, you know, you're accused of being anti-patriotic if you don't support the White House.
Right.
And the plan that Cummings is a part of needed to be couched in the idea that they think there's a greater good in this.
Right.
That it's not just, Cummings is not strictly evil. I mean, none of these people are strictly evil who are involved with this conspiracy. They genuinely believe they're manipulating things for the good of the American people and for our country.
Well, I think that's one of the great things about the show and the characters and certainly the choices the actors have made and what you guys pull out when you're editing the work. If you can walk that tightrope without being evil, being, you know, et cetera, then play the gray area, then you guys can make of it what you want in future writing. So it's...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really interesting when you have characters. This is what's making the season, I think, so interesting is it's not a clear villain who has clear, you know, evil agenda. It's much more cloudy. It's much more cloudy issues.
Right.
gas. It was recovered from a training camp 2 years ago. Disorientation occurs moments after exposure.
I just want to know, how did you get this guy to puke up this stuff? Because when I saw, I mean, we first saw that, it was, you know.
I have no idea. I was trying to think of some reason to nauseate this fellow, but I couldn't think of what it was that we did. Obviously, it was a beautiful special effects team that put some fizzy liquid in his mouth.
Yeah.
Now, according to DOD, the Centox 6 nerve gas stolen from...
Well, I got to tell you, working with these two actors here, Jude Chiklala and
Gregory
Itzen, I mean, holy cow. These are guys at the top of their game. Incredible performers.
Oh, yeah. And Greg has such the, he has the, sometimes I would consider the thankless role of playing a character that people hate. But he does it so beautifully, you know, and they don't hate him for being bad. They hate him for being inept and weak and all these other things. And it's very hard to play that and still have, you know, still find the empathy
right.
for this character. And I think that's what Jean Smart brings, you know, with her genuine... She has a genuine love. They have a genuine love for each
Absolutely.
Other.
Absolutely. And you see those human moments. Yeah. The interaction between the two of them really humanizes him.
Yeah.
But I've never worked with an actor who is so absolutely in the moment. I mean, you can shoot a scene 10 times from 10 different angles, and if on one, take 10, someone sits down in a chair and it squeaks for the first time, the guy takes it and it just becomes part of the performance of that take.
Actor.
He's staggering.
I don't understand.
I can't talk about it on the phone, Mike. We need to meet.
No one can know about this, not even the president.
And shifty-eyed Jude.
Yeah.
Look at him.
This is the first time Mike Novick and Jack are talking since Mike has learned that Jack is alive.
Okay.
And it's a tricky thing to try and, you want to play out moments where it would be a significant moment for these two characters to know, oh, my God, you're really alive. It's true. But the plot has to keep propelling forward. And what I find on this show and writing this show is you have to kind of blow past what you would imagine to be the more natural emotional play between those characters. For the sake of momentum, for the sake of Jack trying to move his agenda.
No, I need to stay here. CTU still needs my help.
Well, I think the viewers, too, they don't want that much dead space, in a sense, with a show like this.
They don't, but I don't necessarily consider those emotional moments that... I think that's the stuff that makes it realer.
So, well, you have to pick your moments,
and
though,
like
right?
Yeah, exactly. And you're dying to see, like, oh, what's going to happen when Kim finds out that Jack's alive, or when Nova finds out that Jack's alive, and what that scene's going to be, and... You think about it and wind up going, Jack, you're alive. Well, how nice. What do you need from me?
So often, though, there are the brief moments that even if they're a nanosecond, they're so full that as an audience member for me, I mean, even knowing what's coming, you watch them and you react to it because there's so much expectation. And even if you feel like you're blown by it, it still works for me, even if it's not
extended.
Well, that's,
you know, it's this show is less is more.
Yeah.
I was with her before I had to disappear.
You're still in love with her.
The thing I want to compliment is that the production, the directors, the actors, the editors, they really find a lot of the subtext in the production itself. Whereas, you know, I'm used to more writer-driven shows where you have to kind of infuse a lot of that emotion in it. You know, the directors here, John Kassar, you know, Brian and Brad, they can just do it with a look. They can get the actors just look at her across the room. And suddenly all that emotion that you wanted to infuse in the dialogue and or felt like it needed to be in there, they find it. They find it in the moments, and they find it in scenes like this. I mean,
absolutely. But these are the moments where you really need to spend that time.
Yeah. And in this show, it's tough. These are scenes that went through a lot of hands because there was a need to kind of always calibrate exactly how much emotion should be there, how much does Jack care about her, how much is too much for the tears.
Right.
And, you know, it's a tricky balancing act with a show because you don't have time to really spend making those scenes more lived in. They just kind of have to serve their purpose and move on.
Yeah.
Your man didn't do his job.
Oh, don't put that on me, Nathanson. You were supposed to have Bauer killed hours ago.
I'm not going to warn you.
Oh, the sneaky guy.
I like playing on the phone. When you're doing the phone scenes, you don't have the actors there generally doing the other side, do you?
On every other show I've ever worked on, you don't have the actors. You've just got somebody reading them. On this show, almost every phone conversation I had, the actors were there.
That's great.
Even Kiefer, last season 4, we were doing something, and there was a phone conversation with Kiefer, and he was off that day, and the guy came into work to do his off-camera.
Oh, that's great.
It just blew my socks off.
That's great professionalism. That's good to hear.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why the show's so great, is his absolute single-minded commitment to making it the best show it can be. It's really admirable. And what a powerhouse performer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I got to tell you. I mean,
Kiefer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His presence is remarkable. And I can say that because I'm dead.
There's Glenn. Great character, Aaron Pierce.
Fantastic character, great actor.
Yeah.
And that's another one with just a look.
He
conveys so much.
You know, his love for David Palmer doesn't have to be expressed. His affection. He's so wonderful at playing all that. So.
Well, you get that sense of a solid guy when you see him.
Cart me up to some psychiatric hospital.
Ma'am.
Aaron, someone in my husband's administration, they're trying to shut me up because I know the truth.
What truth?
David Palmer.
This was one of the other interesting things where we hit upon this idea, or I forgot who it was, Howard maybe, but the idea that there's something more between Pierce and Martha Logan.
Uh-huh.
There's actually, you know, a subtextual love.
Interesting.
That is unrequited. We play into it. There's a few more moments that happen later in the season,
right,
where we illustrate that more. But still, this little privileged moment between the two of them. It's playing the idea that the head of Secret Service has a thing for the First Lady. I think it's really fascinating.
Well, what I loved about that moment on Glenn's side, I mean, Gene's they're both great actors. But with Glenn, it's a great lesson for actors is how you can do so little and yet be so full.
Yeah.
Because when you watch him, there's not a lot of extraneous motion there.
No.
And yet every second's full.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing we need is for the public to find out that nerve gas is out there.
And this guy rocked this year.
Yeah, holy he is. This is a fantastic cast. I mean, I can keep singing the praises of our cast. I know no one wants to hear that, but they're just great. I mean, everybody's just great down the wire. And, you know, Sean did a great job.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Musically?
Yeah. Oh. Well, yeah. I was talking about Astin.
Oh, Sean Astin. Absolutely. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
And Sean, our music director.
Well, yes. I was thinking about Sean Callery because Sean did another series that I did, so I've known him for a long time. Yeah, so when I hear Sean on this show, it's like, boom.
His scores have been just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, they're another character. They really are.
Okay, this is the inside man that Cummings has placed among the terrorists, among Erwick and the terrorists, who's planting the device, the trigger device, where they're going to betray the terrorists and blow up the nerve gas once they get it back to their base. You just know in the scene that he's done for.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Secure the canisters according to my instructions. No need to be concerned.
All right. Here are the customs documents you need when the shipment arrives.
The thing about 24 is everything's kind of out there. We don't play a lot of games with the audience in terms of trying to fool them. Yeah, we do things sometimes that are unexpected, but generally speaking, everything's on the table. This scene is written to go, this guy's dead. We're not mincing words, you know. We don't try to, you know, make it a surprise that Erwick has found him out. We see that. I mean, the characters' motivations are always expressed beforehand. You know, you'll see them so that you'll know what they're going to do, and part of the fun is anticipating it.
What I love about the way the show's shot is that you always feel like you're eavesdropping on things. You know, right. So many of the shots are from behind something or there's something obscuring part of the view, and you just feel like you're watching from around a corner as an audience member, which makes it really exciting.
Or somebody who snuck onto the set.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Makes it very intimate.
But that's personal. I know, but he's been living with my son and me for the last 6 months. We started to become a family.
Again, a lot of people wanted to make more of this relationship and this triangle, but there really wasn't anything. There really wasn't anything to play. I think that Kiefer, rightly so, feels that Audrey is the woman he loves. He didn't feel tempted by Connie's character, but it's still tragic to see that she feels for him and that he can't love another woman.
Mm.
So, but some people expected her to be back and expected this triangle to play out over the season. And that's, again, one of the things about the show is that we'll drop it. You know, we won't drag these things out.
Right.
A few episodes. You know, this triangle's not going to ride out for all 24 episodes. The fact that Walt Cummings is the bad guy, you know, as far as we can tell at this point, we're revealing it here.
Exactly.
Revealing it, he comes clean here, and he gets his comeuppance here. And, you know, here it's only six episodes into the series, and I think that's what people love. Is that
absolutely.
They're expecting these things to play out longer and longer, and we don't. We just kind of, you know, people catch up to the audience quicker on this show.
I love the fact that you had Cummings come clean,
yeah,
you know, with the president.
When this is over, are you...
This is a scene that a lot of people hate. I noticed a lot of fans hated the fact that Audrey chose this moment to call Jack to talk about her feelings for him when he's about to meet the president and confront him about his chief of staff. And I can't argue that. You know, it's one of those things, it's a very difficult show to find these moments. And you just have to bend over backwards sometimes and just accept, look...
You got to shoehorn them in. Somewhere.
You got to shoehorn them in, is basically, or they don't get in. And if they don't get in, there's no character development. There's no relationship development. You know, Jack's always on the move.
Yeah.
But you got to play a little bit of a story. And this time he's tricky. You know, but we felt there was enough of a lull here that she might be able to work it in.
Well, and it's an emotional thread that we need as viewers. We absolutely need.
Some of us need.
Some of, yes.
Some want, some need. Some could do without.
It's time. I've got to go.
Jack.
I have to go.
Yeah, I know. Okay, bye.
And you don't want to waste Kim. I mean, Kim Raver is so wonderful that, you know, she's stuck at CTU. You don't want her at a keyboard going, Jack, I'm helping with a satellite uplink. You need the thing that she brings to it, which is grounding Jack in what he left behind when he faked his death. You know, he left this woman behind.
Yeah.
The press about the roadblocks coming.
There's an example you're talking about right behind the wall. You just saw half.
That's right.
Half of them obscured by the right there.
Precisely. So you're looking in.
Mrs. Logan, is she all right? She's fine, sir. She was hiding in the stables.
And I love the set is amazing. I mean, if you look out there, it looks like it's an exterior, and there's a reflecting pool out there which you see occasionally.
I feel awkward mentioning this.
It's an amazing set, the President's Retreat.
Oh, it is. It's absolutely stunning.
I mean, CTU, the first time I stepped onto the CTU set, I was blown away. I mean, I you know, the show is not shot wide very often. It's everything's very played, usually very intimately. So I never really got the scope
the
of
depth
that
and breadth.
Set.
Absolutely. It's huge.
And when you are actually standing there, you're going, oh, my God, this is a movie set.
Yeah.
And when you go into this Logan's Retreat, you have to take my word for it. It's a house. There are rooms upon rooms and bedrooms and offices.
And you can have continuous shots that last.
Continuous shots, yeah,
for minutes.
Hallways, and it's remarkable.
Mr. President.
I kept thinking that I should have ended up floating in that reflecting pool at some point.
No such luck. You get to hang by your neck.
You know, I will say that, you know, periodically you'll see the water reflecting off the walls and things like that. And
how
they've done that, they've got a little mechanical shark.
Is that true?
That they put in there, and he swims back and forth, and his tail, as he's swimming back and forth,
oh, that's fantastic.
His tail is fanning the water.
And that's something to look for, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can see the little mechanical shark
look
moving outside.
For the shark in
so
the background.
See the water rippling right there?
Yeah, exactly.
The
that's it.
The little shark.
That's what we're
That's awesome. Bruce.
This scene, when we did it, I don't know, John Cassar, who directed this episode, said he thought it was the longest scene that you guys had ever shot on the show between two actors.
Interesting.
It was five pages, and...
Oh, it doesn't play like it.
No.
And you guys, it's riveting, this scene.
It ended up just being one of those wonderful moments, but as actors, we both had done our homework, and I think we shot the scene over the course of maybe 7 hours for all the different angles and this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
We did not go up on our lines one time. After lunch, our first take after lunch, I had one bobble, but aside from that, neither one of us ever forgot our lines. It was like doing a play. And
wow.
And once we...
That must have been fun for you. That must have been great fun.
It was staggering. But that's, you know, again, a tribute to Greg. He's an incredible stage performer. And when you're working with him as an actor, not only are you working with the best actor you could ever dream of working with,
yeah,
you're working with a guy who, as you're going through the first blocking rehearsals, can absolutely give you, if you're having problems with something, he can just give you that one line that
put you back on track.
Absolutely. And I was having a difficult time with one section of this scene, and I couldn't quite get And I kept getting in my head, and Greg just came over and he just said, word of advice. I said, what? He goes, just shoot me between the eyes. And that's all, and that was it. And I was like, that's it. Right between the eyes, and that was it, and the scene worked.
You're a traitor. No. No, Mr. President, I am a patriot, doing what needs to be done for the continued safety and well-being of this nation.
The patriot speech is one we give a lot this season.
Yes.
We have to keep justifying the rationale for what's going on, that this is a patriotic act. And it's, here we are in episode. We're actually, at the moment, we're doing this commentary. We're writing episode 22, and people are still making the patriot speech.
I'll be darned.
It
is apropos of the times.
It is, and it's the only thing that can really justify a lot of people's actions here. You have to believe that they are zealots for their country, and
absolutely
we'll let that happen.
And my girlfriend, when she was watching this, said, now people can see what you're like when you're angry.
that was pretty forceful.
It's like, oh, God, no, I'm a quiet man.
I should mention, Evan Katz did a lot of heavy lifting in that scene and other scenes. You know, like all the episodes of 24, there's more than one hand, no matter what the credited writer is. You know, we all kind of take passes at acts and here and there.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, so we noticed it's very much a club. More than any show I've ever worked on is more collaborative in the script process.
Interesting. Well, I had that scene totally memorized 3 days before we shot it, and then I got the rewrite, and I memorized
I did the rewrite. Yeah.
And I think the day of, we got another one. So.
Yeah, I was doing. Yeah, once it got past some of the stuff, we had to go back, and I had to go back and do some stuff to it.
Yeah, but you guys always make it better. It's just incredible how that works.
You know, that's the other thing about the show, again, that the scripts are continually being rewritten as you're shooting. I've never been on a show where the scripts are more colorful. You know, with every rewrite, you get colored pages, and there are more colors in those scripts than in the rainbow. I mean, they're just...
Well, then you go back to using the same colors
again. You start going, it's second white, second blue.
That's right.
Yeah, and I've never, but the show is always honing itself. These guys are perfectionists.
Well, when you Howard get to second salmon, Evan, you know that.
Yeah. Evan and Howard in particular are very, very meticulous, and they want every single comma in the right place.
Well, that's great. And it shows.
And then, of course, it gets rewritten during the production. Kiefer changes the lines and, you know, makes it better than anything we've done. So,
Well, his instincts are quite wonderful.
Absolutely. He makes it great. And the directors, too. John, in particular, creates a lot of things that aren't in the script or finds ways to shoot them, finds lines to drop, reworks things. Again, everybody's working to make the show the best it possibly can be. There was Logan, who's kind of, now he's no longer in charge. It's Cummings is calling the shots now. At one point, we had scripted that Cummings was sitting at the president's desk.
Oh, wow.
Fascinating. Logan was kind of standing off on the side.
Fascinating.
And Cummings was sitting at his desk on this phone call.
Fascinating.
And you're just going, oh, my God, it's a coup,
One thing about this particular scene, I had been in Sweden. My children live there, and I'd been over there seeing them, and this was a pickup scene that we hadn't gotten while we shot the original episode, and I had been told we'd shoot it a few days after I got back from Sweden, so I checked my voicemail just before I got on the plane to fly back from Sweden to see if I needed to memorize this scene or not on the plane, and there were no messages, so I thought, okay, great. Well, so I didn't look at it. I fly back from Sweden, I land, and they must have called 10 minutes after I left Sweden to say, you're shooting it tomorrow morning, so I get back here at night. And I had to be at the set at 6 o'clock the next morning to shoot this scene.
Hey.
So we shot I just literally stayed up all night, memorized
the
scene.
Business.
Oh, it was hysterical. But the scene worked. I thought, how is this going to fly? And you cannot tell that it's a month later.
No. You do look a little bit more wrinkled around the eyes.
Yes, there you go. Well, that's it. It's the pruning effect.
I kid because you're so good looking.
Oh, please, thank you.
No, thank you.
Yes, no. You guys should see this guy. Mm-hmm. All right. It's makeup, heavy makeup.
Yes.
You know, there is another thing. Because this was 12 to 1, I was determined to actually show them eating lunch. You know, this is one of the criticisms of the show is that why is no one eating a meal?
There was a meal in the corner of that.
There was, but we never really see it. We never really see the platter that was out there.
But as actors, and we knew there was food there.
Well, the later scene where Jack holds a knife, you know, takes a knife out and is holding, I had it as a knife that was on the platter. That there was a big, you know, cutting knife on the platter that, you know, he improvises this.
Right.
I didn't imagine he had any weapons on him. I don't know if this got changed in production or not, but I wanted specifically for him to have to go to the platter.
The food.
And look, they're having lunch. It's 12 to 1. Of course they're having lunch.
David, that's very funny.
Yeah, but of course it fell away and Jack had a switchblade inside his pocket, you know, and oh, okay.
Orders of the president directly? No.
Which was quite intimidating, by the way.
The knife.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll get to the knife when you... The thank you is something that Glenn added.
Yeah.
Which is, that expression with him going, thank you, is priceless, and that was something that was not in the script.
Off by division.
Why?
The White House wants to use their own people to coordinate from now on.
That doesn't make sense. We'll waste hours getting another agency up to speed.
Yeah, I know. I tried calling the president. He's not taking my calls.
What about Mike Novick?
This is a scene that I really wanted in here. We weren't showing the conflict between Lynn and Buchanan enough.
Mm-hmm.
We can do about it.
That here's this young up guy who really is in over his head. I mean, he's smart, capable, but he doesn't know how to make the hard decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Always. And setting in this conflict was something that I was really happy to write.
That's because you don't have the experience to know any better.
I love this.
Mr. Buchanan, you step outside for a moment.
You know, unfortunately, it got dropped again after this episode, but I really wanted to keep this conflict alive of, I know more than you.
Are we clear about who's in charge here?
Yeah, but my advice stands.
James, they're great.
But you buy this. I mean, you absolutely buy it.
That nerve gas, it's your responsibility to ignore it, at least until we can make our case to the White House. You also need to learn to make decisions faster.
Bill?
I love that. He hesitates. You got to decide now. It's like, it's like, none of this, don't think about it. Just make this decision now.
We're not doing our job.
It's such a little thing, but
I'm totally caught up in the scene right now.
Yeah, but see, these are the conflicts. Another thing that I was steered away from early on when I first started working here was there's usually not a lot of conflicts within CTU. Everyone usually is on the same page. And, you know, it's hard to write these scenes when there's no conflict.
Uh-huh.
Then it's just shouting out orders and people following orders. And
right.
Here's another scene I'm proud of, too, is this idea that she's mourning the relationship she had with her husband.
Yeah.
And she just did, how did we get here?
Yeah.
And Jean.
Charles and me.
It just breaks your heart.
Yeah.
I was his confidant. All his years in Congress, my opinion was the one that mattered most to him.
Such a proud woman.
Yeah. See, these are the downbeats. It's very hard. Sometimes it's hard to get to in this show, but this is my favorite things in the episode. These downbeats. Not the action, the... Although you getting your ass kicked was a lot of fun.
Yeah, of course it was. And I think the viewers enjoyed the hell out of that.
He can do whatever he wants. If he wanted to be here, he would be.
There's a little telling line in there. He's the president. He can do what he wants.
Absolutely.
That's a little bit of a foreshadow, actually.
Absolutely.
For those who continue watching into future episodes.
Bauer, you're being moved per the president's orders.
Where?
To a class 3 detention.
Here's another interesting thing. When I originally wrote this, they were like, you know, they were talking to each other like they were friends. And it never occurred to me they've never met before. And all the time that we played all the years that Pierce was serving under Palmer, you know, Jack was always talking to Palmer on the phone virtually, you know, almost, you know, 95% of the time. So here's these two characters that we like and we care about, and they've never met. So we just had to play it as Jack recognizing him somehow and then using his love for Palmer, Aaron Pierce's love for Palmer, to get him to help him.
I couldn't tell you, but I can tell you that the terrorists are now in possession of a weaponized nerve gas, and Walt Cummings may be the last chance we have to stop them in time. Walt Cummings ordered the assassination of David Palmer.
We think.
I know it's hard to believe, but I can prove it. It's true.
Or so Walt Cummings thinks.
Absolutely.
That hard to believe.
You don't know that that's not the case, or don't you?
I only know.
Know what you've seen.
I only know what I've seen. Exactly.
All right. Well, I'll let you keep watching. So.
Yeah, and I will believe.
No, it's like an onion.
Oh, that's what keeps us coming back.
Or like a wagon that's wheels have come off. It's one or the other. I'm not really sure.
I need your help.
Jack and Bill, here's these two guys. You just go, you know, they're both action guys. I mean, Pierce is a loyal Secret Service agent, loyal to the president. But you also know that when he goes into action, this guy's good.
Absolutely.
You know, he's the best. He's the head of the Secret Service. So putting the two of them in the same room was exciting.
Bowers escaped. When?
I love this.
Putting Jack in the room with Logan was a thrill.
Yeah.
Because,
oh, absolutely.
Again, he rarely gets to play a scene with the president.
Yeah.
He's usually playing scenes on the phone to the president.
And those scenes were so good.
Oh, yeah. Because here's the guy, you know, you want him to slap some sense into Logan, Jack.
CTU hasn't transferred the search operation to their jurisdiction yet.
What's the problem?
I don't know. But you need to call Lynn McGill. Make sure we're in charge of this.
I've been avoiding his calls because he's just going to ask me why I'm pulling CTU off the search operation, and I don't know what to tell him.
You don't have to tell him anything. You're the president.
You're the president.
Agent Pierce, we're in the middle of a meeting, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Mr. President, my name is Jack Bauer, and I'm sorry to have to confront you like this. But your chief of staff is withholding information that is vital to this nation's security.
Who's he going to call?
I know.
Oh.
It's like, if I could just get to the phone.
Now, you'll notice when Kiefer,
I don't yell help.
When he gets this knife up to my eye in a moment, look at his knuckle on his right hand.
Okay.
It's bleeding.
Is that for real?
Yeah. They put a pad on me. A hard shell on my stomach, so he could, and then with a pad over that, and the pad slipped down at one point. I felt so badly for Kiefer because, you know, in order to sell it, you got to make contact.
Sure.
Then you pull the punch, but you got to make some contact, and he was hitting this pad, and it was ripping the skin off his knuckle, and he never said a word. And I looked down after about the fourth time through this, and I saw the blood running down his hand. And I thought, this guy has not whimpered. He's not made a sound. He's just,
you know,
it's got to hurt.
You know why? Kiefer is Jack Bauer.
The guy is Jack Bauer. And the thing is, he's not a big man. His presence is so huge.
You buy him taking on anybody, an 8-foot tall.
Absolutely. I mean, he's unbelievably intimidating. And it's a wonderful thing.
I'm talking with you. You understand me? You read my file. First thing I'm going
to
do, I'm going
to originally, this was Jack was going to shoot.
There was a gun right next to my head.
Yeah. He was going to shoot you in the kneecap.
Okay.
First thing was going to shoot your kneecap. And we said, you know, Jack's done that before. He's shot kneecaps.
Sorry, David. Just
there's the bloody
knuckle. And you'll see it when he gets it up to my eye. So originally he was going to shoot me in the kneecap. But you're right. You've seen that before.
Yeah, yeah.
This.
So I went to the eyeball. I went there.
The thing was, that was a real knife.
Really?
When he was pointing it at my eye. All that was a... And then this,
but
of
this
course...
But this is a fake.
This is a fake.
Yeah.
But see his knuckle there?
Yeah.
Look at that.
I swear, Mr. Bauer!
Is this where your eye is?
The next morning, or the next day, we shot the scene that comes after this.
Oh, I see.
And I get to work, and the director, I go to grab some breakfast. I hadn't even been to the makeup trailer, and he goes, wow. He looks at me and goes, great job on the makeup in your eye. I said, what are you talking about? I said, I haven't been to makeup. He goes, no, the blood in your eye that they put in there. And my eye had hemorrhaged inside the eyeball and the bottom right
during
quadrant.
The scene, you think?
No, because it wasn't when I got home that night.
So
it was fine.
Okay.
But at some point over the night or whatever, it had hemorrhaged. So the whole bottom right quarter of my eyeball is bright, full of blood. So
that's
you see
beautiful.
It in this next scene, if you can, you know, if you guys slow-mo it, stop
everybody
it, whatever.
Says, yeah, stop it, zoom in. Get your telescopes out.
Exactly. But that was an intense scene. I mean, Kiefer was just so on the money.
Yeah.
Regard the order. Then you want CTU to maintain operational control of the retrieval?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm alerting CBP.
Get hazmat teams in there to set up a perimeter.
You know, it's hard. You know, we try to resist the idea of Jack torturing people. I mean, because, you know, you go to the well too often. But that was so justified. It was not strictly torture. He was just beating you up and holding a knife to your eyeball and threatening you to cut out your eye, eyes.
Hey, got the info.
Mr. President, Agent Pierce and I.
This is a lovely moment. Absolutely lovely moment.
Turn it over.
Aaron.
Yes, Mr. President.
Take back your shield and get Walt Cummings out of my sight.
Yes, sir.
Yep, he just follows orders.
Yeah.
You know, no. Okay.
But that's a guy you would want on your team.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
Pierce. Absolutely.
He's a great soldier. But he knows enough, like, he was in that scene while Jack was beating you up.
That's right.
He's there to protect the president. I'm upholding, he says to the president, I'm here to just protect you, sir.
Yeah.
And by getting information on Walt Cummings, I'm protecting you from having to cover for him.
That's right.
So it played beautifully.
This is another incredible scene.
You need to understand.
Two heavyweight fighters.
Yeah.
But he lied to me. I was coerced.
I think that little look says, I don't really care.
Yeah.
There is one more thing that we need to discuss.
What is that, sir?
You.
He's still respectful, but you know that Jack does not like this president.
Yeah, it's for both of us.
But Kiefer carries such empathy at the same time as being so strong. It's an incredible combination. You don't see that often.
Which was to identify and locate David Palmer's
killer. Well, one of the subtexts here that I'm not sure comes across was that he tells Audrey that after this is over, he wasn't sure what he was going to do. But right now, he's being asked by the president to disappear again.
Yeah.
So he's basically, right now when he's saying this, he's leaving Audrey again.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And because it's not on the heels of the phone call from Audrey, because it may not come through.
Yeah, but see, you know what? I got it.
That's the pain that he's getting right now is I have to.
I read it as an audience
okay,
member.
Okay, good.
Absolutely.
Good.
And that's just out of his performance and then what you guys had laid in.
Right.
Writing-wise.
Excuse me.
Got to take his phone with him. Because what is Jack Bauer without his cell phone?
Absolutely. What a beautiful episode, man.
Thanks.
So
yeah,
beautifully
everybody, it's just, you
written.
Know, it's
holy.
Nice.
Holy
well,
smoke.
Well, I thank you for that. You know, you try, like I say, there's a lot of hands in all the scripts, and you try, you know, we're all trying to make every episode as good as the next one or better, you know, at least better than the next one, I should say, the last one.
Again, another brilliant moment here.
Thank you. I was very proud of this one, too.
Wow.
Again, you know, you just put these characters in there, you put Greg and Gene, and, you know, they're just gold, so you don't, it's not really necessary to write much.
What's happening?
Lyle.
Charles.
Come on, get out of the car. Get here.
What?
And this is after all these episodes of not, hours of not believing her.
David was trying to warn you and warn me. I should have listened to you.
You believe me now?
It was Walt Cummings. He lied to me. He convinced me that you were out of control.
Walt?
Sending you back to the clinic in Vermont was his idea.
And she's not letting him off the hook. It's not, you know, as usual, Logan trying to pawn it off on someone else.
Like I was some nuisance to be gotten rid of.
God, they're good.
Excuse me, Mr. President, but you wanted to know when a link with CTU was established?
Yes. Thank you, Wendy. See that the First Lady's bags get back to her room?
Of course.
I've got to go.
Another telling moment.
Great moment.
I do not forgive you.
Absolutely.
Until the next episode. Because, there's just a long you can go. Like, I'm giving you the silent treatment for the next, hour.
Absolutely.
And then I'll have to deal with you again.
Until Jack gave us.
There's only one ship scheduled to leave the
port. I'm sorry we didn't get to use Mary Lynn enough in this episode. Like I said, there was a little bit more between she and Spencer. And a little bit, that story got pushed back a little bit. But she's so great, and she is the... really the sole vessel for comedy or just humor, just, you know, grounded humor in the show.
And yet, you know, the character seems to be developed so much more this season as which is wonderful.
It's the only container stocking medical supplies.
Yeah, she's not strictly comic relief. But the fact that you can put those lines, sometimes you can put great, you know, very cutting remarks out of her, which you can't really do with other characters. And she puts such a funny spin on it.
Oh, she does. Oh, my God. No, she's quite wonderful.
The man in the yellow tie.
Erwick. He's a chemical engineer trained at the University of St. Petersburg. Joined his country's separatist movement 6 years ago.
Do we have any clear images? Any file photos?
No. Which is why we need you to ID him when the strike force has a visual.
Okay, just make sure the CBP knows that we need to take Erwick alive.
They know. Stand by.
What's the situation?
The strike team is in place, Mr. President. We're just waiting for the video feed to come up.
See, and it's always great to see when they work Dennis's image, you know, Palmer's image.
Absolutely.
It reminds you again, oh yeah, this is Jack looking, you know, he was looking to get vengeance for David Palmer's death. And what he's going to find out is he hasn't gotten it yet. Walt Cummings is not the end of the Palmer conspiracy.
I got to watch the first two episodes of this with Dennis Haysbert at Greg Itzen's house. Greg had...
Wow. It's like Dennis, Camp David over there.
It was. It was Dennis and Jude Ciccolello and Greg and myself and,
nice.
And our ladies. And it was really wonderful. A lot of fun.
They shot this at Long Beach Port, I believe.
Don't move! Put your hands in the air now!
A split screen, so it so works great. On this. I mean, it's such an obvious thing to be saying in year five, but, you know, to be able to have characters reacting as we're seeing it with them, it really puts you there. And the same way you were just describing the way the show's shot, as if you're an observer.
That's right.
It's like you look over at them to see
how
they're
reacting. You're experiencing it right then.
You're experiencing the same moment and be able to see how they're reacting. Rather than cutting to them, they're actually...
Exactly.
It's in real time. It really makes a difference.
There are no gas canisters here, CTU. Repeat, the nerve gas is not here.
Get Walt Cummings in here now!
Yes, sir.
You're in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
You're in big trouble.
Damn it!
A lot of people are upset. Jack doesn't say "damn it" in this episode. There's a drinking game out there.
He was usurped by the president.
Jack says "damn it" in every episode, and I gave it to the president in this one. So,
oh God, what is it? That's Schaefer.
Is a little bloody eye there, or am I wrong? Is this the one?
You know, it actually may be in the opening of the next episode.
Okay.
That opening scene, the next episode.
Right. It's a slow hemorrhage.
That's right. Exactly.
Jack did it. It's a slow. He injured your eye just so that the hemorrhage is taking
it's
effect.
The bottom right corner of my right eye.
Watch for it in episode 7.
Episode 7. That's right. Oh, I love that smirky look of Jean's there. She's coming in.
Yeah.
It's his cell phone, sir.
This was a tricky thing trying to figure out. Well, how are we going to get the terrorists to call into the president? Well, the only way they could do it is if they call into Cummings' phone.
Clever.
And they'd only be able to do that if they got the phone of the inside man. And you have to figure all this stuff. I got to tell you, it's sometimes your head spinning trying to figure out the logistics of how does he call in, you know? And
we know what we need.
Yeah, we know what we
there.
Need. Yeah, how does... Well, the Secret Service have Cummings' phone in a bag and, you know, in an envelope. And
the president had nothing to do with this. Nor did anyone else in the government. I was acting alone.
You really expect me to believe that?
It's the truth.
It's you being a patriot and protecting the president.
We can negotiate something.
Taking all the blame.
I eliminate them. Your country is about to pay a very steep price.
A steep price. That can only mean 18 more episodes.
Absolutely. Fun and games.
Yeah.
Been a pleasure, David.
You too, John. It was great, man. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.